Hi, and welcome back to the Mindful Sport Performance Podcast. I'm Dr. Keith Kaufman.
I'm Dr. Tim Pinot.
And we are very excited to be joined today by Jack Beer. Jack, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, definitely. Jack currently plays professional soccer for New York City FC2. He formerly played college soccer at Georgetown University here in DC, where Tim and I are from. Where he won the NCAA National Championship in 2019. Inspired by his own experiences dealing with anxiety and depression, Jack serves as a mental health advocate and aims to transform the narrative surrounding mental health and athletics. He is a whole being athlete ambassador for Athletes for Hope, where he is featured on live panels to discuss the importance of reducing the stigma of mental health. So again, really excited to talk with you today, Jack. And mental health stigma, I think, is something that's near and dear to Tim and my hearts, and so excited to chat with you about it a little bit.
Yeah, me too.
But you were kind enough to agree to get us started on our podcast. If you haven't listened before, we like to begin with just a short practice, just both to orient us to our conversation that we'll have, and also to get introduced to how different people do these kinds of practices. So, Jack, thank you so much, and kick us off.
So I like to do Wim Hof. What Wim Hof is, for those who don't know, is 30 breaths. And the key for me with those breaths is to not take a pause in between the in-breath and the out-breath. So you do 30 of those, and then you hold for about a minute or minute and a half, or until you need to take a breath. Then you breathe in for 15 seconds, hold that, and then you release. And then you do three rounds of that, and it tends to make me feel relaxed when I'm feeling anxious, or I do it before a big game. And I like to do it sometimes in the morning, just in general. So yeah, let's kick it off. So 30 breaths in, a minute hold, 15 seconds in. So it'll be. Hold. And release. That is it.
Yeah. Thank you for leading that. I've heard of the Wim Hof method. I had never practiced it. And it was a lot to pay attention to, because I was like paying attention to you, but I was also paying attention to myself. And it was like, I found myself like very engaged with your style of breathing. It got like deeper and almost more forceful as you went on. And then I found myself kind of like mimicking that. And then when we hold, I breathed in and held, but it felt like I had no air in my lungs. It was the weirdest sensation. I was like, I'm not gonna be able to hold this for a minute. And then I just released a little bit of air and felt fine and was able to hold it for the rest of the minute, you know? And then that release at the end was just like a, like you said, like it's kind of activating at first, but then it really relaxes you.
Yeah, exactly. After I take the first 30 breaths, usually around 25 to 30, I'll start to get kind of like a tingly sensation, just very relaxed. And especially once you do two or three rounds of it, then you get even more relaxed. And like it can, as you saw and as you said, it can get kind of intense. But the point is that actually it's like kind of the opposite when you release. So you go intense to get relaxed.
Yeah,
I had a similar experience too, that I think, as we often do in these kinds of exercises, we have judgments, you know, and I think my first judgment was, I'm not gonna be able to hold my breath for a minute. I don't think I took a deep enough breath to be able to hold it for that long. But it was odd when you were saying that, Tim. I was like, yeah, me too. Like I just sort of released a little bit of air slowly a couple of times when it started to back up on me. And I was like, oh, I'm okay. That was an interesting, unexpected reaction I found my body having. And then it was funny that you had the same one.
It actually helps on that 30th breath. I used to do the same thing. I would breathe in and then hold it. Wim Hof, he actually breathes out on it. So he breathes in and he goes, and that's when he holds it. So he doesn't hold it on the in, he holds it on the out, which took me a couple times, as you guys explained, to learn. It does help when you breathe out on it, but you can do it either way.
That's so interesting. Yeah, it is so counterintuitive, because your thought is I'm gonna breathe in to take this deep breath in and hold that for a minute.
Yeah,
that's fascinating.
Well, and I know I recognize it's not kind of explicitly a mindfulness exercise, but just this idea of like discovering the unknown and being surprised by your reactions, and even like doing something that feels kind of counterintuitive, but then like allowing the experience to be what it is. I mean, it really requires a lot of mindfulness to kind of embrace it.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost like the best form of meditation. You can't really think about anything other than your breath. You have to, because you're just, it's so intense.
Yeah. Really, yeah.
I'm curious, how did you first get introduced to this?
Yeah.
So a life coach that I'd been working with introduced it to me randomly one day. You know, we talk just general stuff, what's going on in my life. And he was like, you know, I just found this Wim Hof method. It tends to reduce my anxiety. Maybe you should try it. And then I think he showed it to a bunch of his clients, obviously, as well as me. And then I had done that pretty ferociously, pretty much every day since then. And I did it this morning. I do it on most days, especially game days. They really like it, really calms my nervous system down.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
And that too feels like, I mean, like such an important part. I mean, what we advocate in terms of mindfulness, or just mental training generally, right, is the consistency piece. That like mental training needs to be treated in the same way as physical training. You know, you don't just like randomly take a week off. You know, it's like it's built in. You need to have consistency. Otherwise you start to lose speed or stamina or skill. And yeah, the mental stuff is the same way. And so yeah, integrating into your routine, I do this every day. Feels so.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's very important to work on your mental training. I think like it's very obvious when you have an injury and you go in for, you know, to your physical therapist for treatment and things like that. But, you know, who knows when something is, you know, off mentally or good mentally, it's hard. It's those invisible things that are kind of harder to see. So they're very important to keep regimented and keep your standards up.
Yeah. And this might be kind of an in the weeds type of question, but I'm just curious because of the work that I do and the things that I encounter every day. You know, how did it occur to you that, okay, before a game, it's good for me to do something like this that's actually going to lower my arousal? Because I find that so many of the athletes I work with, they have these ideas that I got to fire myself up pregame. And it's usually a pretty novel concept that I'll bring up. Well, maybe that's true. Maybe there are times where you want to do that, but maybe you're someone who actually could benefit from calming your body a little bit before a game. So how did you kind of figure that out? Or maybe was that something you worked on with your life coach? But I'm just sort of curious about that.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think it depends on the person. Because like you said, you know, obviously there's guys that really like to get fired up, listen to loud music on the way to the game. Me personally, I'm the complete opposite. The more relaxed I am, the more focused I can actually be. So that helps me really to get out of my head. I like to use it specifically when, you know, I can't stop thinking about thoughts in that are going to happen in the game. You know, what if this happens about the future? It's like, and we just talked about it, really is like, you can't focus on anything other than your breath when you're doing that, because it is so intense and it leaves you with this nice, almost like natural high of just being present in yourself and being calm. And I feel in a weird way, more energized after, calm, but energized. It's a nice kind of balance. So yeah, that works for me. I know, like you said, other athletes like to get more pumped up. I would argue that this can kind of do the same thing in terms of energizing you, but with a nice calm.
There's like the preparation you do for your body and there's the preparation you do for your mind. And sometimes those are different. Mm-hmm. When you need your body, yeah, you need blood flowing, you need your muscles ready, you need to be warm. And at the same time, you need your mind to be calm and to be focused. And so, and like, it just, your body and mind might then need different things. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And what you were saying too about like the, like these invisible obstacles. I mean, what a great segue into like this whole concept of the stigma around athlete mental health. Like, it's, you know, if you're benched because you have an injury, because your leg is broken, like everyone seems to get that. Like, of course, right. You know, but if you're like, wow, I'm like too anxious to practice today. Like, it's, I think athletes have a really hard time accepting that, admitting that. So I would love to hear a little bit about your journey, or like how you came to this place of like, wow, there is this stigma. And like, I really want to be like this ambassador for it. Like, I want to spread this message.
Yeah. It's been a long journey. I would say, you know, I have loved and played soccer ever since I could walk, basically, but there had been times growing up where I found myself anxious about playing up, a year or two, going to national camps, and having some serious just anxiety about soccer in general. And it's this confusing paradox because it's something I love so much. And at the same time, it can make me feel so nervous and, you know, have all this pressure on me and things that don't make me feel as good. And I really came to the ultimate paradox of that when I went to college at Georgetown. And you know, I have dreams of playing pro, and I really wanted to start freshman year. I really wanted to be the Big East freshman of the year. I wanted to win a national championship, and I wanted to perform to the highest of, you know, highest possible capability. So transitioning to college as a freshman is hard enough in general. And then when you have all this pressure on you and you're a student athlete, you know, it's a whole nother level. So I'm someone that does put a lot of pressure on myself. I like to set high standards. At the end of my freshman year season, I did well. I didn't start most of the games, but I played about 30 to 45 minutes a game. And I was actually kind of used to mainly being, you know, one of the stars, as most of us are going to college. You're usually one of the best on your team in high school or before. So I think it was that change that caused a lot of anxiety for me. I was just kind of all of a sudden disoriented. And it was the transition, like I said, and I found myself at a place at the end of my, at the end of my freshman year, kind of questioning whether I wanted to play anymore. I think a lot of the fun for me of soccer kind of got sucked away. That's how I felt. Yeah. And it just caused a lot of confusion in my life. And I was almost anxious about being anxious because, like I said, it was something I loved so much. I just started kind of experiencing these sensations in my body before I was playing, while I was playing, of just nervousness. And I didn't feel comfortable, doing this every day. And I was questioning it. So I decided to take a break and stop and not play my sophomore year. And I very quickly missed it. and I told my coach, I want to be, back on this team. The break has helped me kind of reorient myself, gain a different perspective. And he was very kind and very open enough to allow me to take the space I needed and come back. So I came back my sophomore year spring, had a really good spring. I was like, yes, everything's good. I'm just going to forget what happened and roll with the punches. So had a good summer leading up to my junior year fall. And, I got back into preseason, and within hours I started, unfortunately, having a panic attack. I think just being around the guys and being in that environment kind of reminded me of some of the pressure that I put on myself. Sure. And unfortunately, like, all this anxiety just came upon me. And I don't know if you guys have had a panic attack, or for those that don't know kind of what it feels like, it basically just really disorients you and you get very shaky and, your head's going in circles and you don't know where you are and you kind of just want to remove yourself for, and need space. So that's basically what I did for a bit. And it still wasn't helping. And within the next 3 days, it was just like kind of panic attack after panic attack. And I finally kind of opened up to my coach about how I was feeling then, because I felt there was no other option. When I took space from the game my freshman year, I kind of told him, like, I'm having questions about where soccer is in my life. I'm not sure about, X, Y, and Z, but I never really opened up about my thoughts, my feelings. At this point, my junior year, I thought everything was good. It was like, I got nothing to lose. I'm not going to hide this anymore. Told my coach, I told my teammates, and I again made the decision. I don't know if I can do this anymore. I remember actually telling my parents and my coach, like, I've never been more sure of a decision in my life to stop playing soccer, because it was just too much for me. That's what I thought. So over the next week, the team went to the preseason hotel. I stayed by myself on campus, kind of just to sit with my thoughts. And over that week, I had got the most support I've ever got in my life, and encouragement in my life. So my teammates just sending me texts, my coaches checking up on me, calling me, setting me up with, people to talk to, guidance counselors. My coaches, my assistant coach's wife had gone through similar things in college. I spent the day with her and her kid just around the park walking and talking. And it was like a big weight had been lifted off my shoulders. It was almost like that was just what I needed, that release to just open up and get encouragement and support back about how I was feeling. So long story short, I was back on the team in a week. I ended the season with 4 goals, 3 assists. I was the Big East tournament most valuable player. And we ended up winning a national championship that year. So to come, I still think about it, to think that I had said that I had been the most sure in my life of quitting soccer. And then 3 months later, I found myself taking a penalty in the national championship final and we win, is just, it gives me a lot of joy. But honestly, the lesson that I learned from that whole experience is really just to never give up, obviously. And really it was to never be afraid to open up. and share my truth with my coaches, my teammates, and the world, because that was what lifted all the energy and the weight off my shoulders. And that was what allowed me to kind of be who I was and feel comfortable in that environment. So that whole journey led me into all of my mental health, advocacy after that, and my involvement with Athletes for Hope.
Wow. Yeah. I just, as you were kind of sharing your story, I noticed a kind of reaction within myself, of just like, wow, you're so comfortable, or you seem to be so comfortable talking about this. And it was like, this feels like a unique experience. I have a man, like a man, and an active current athlete, right? Just be like, hey,
yep,
I'm here. I have this anxiety. This is what's going on. And like, I just, the openness, the vulnerability, it's really inspiring. And I think, you're speaking to something so powerful about what we can get back when we share this kind of stuff. Cause of course the fear is going to be, like, coach isn't going to understand, or the other players are going to belittle you. And I imagine maybe that was part of what held you back from talking in the first place. And I actually kind of would be curious to ask about that, but I guess my takeaway from your story is like to question the frame, right? Cause I like when you said, I've never been more sure of anything. I don't want to play soccer anymore. Like, I translate that in my head of like, oh, I've never been more sure of anything. I don't want to have any more panic attacks.
Mm-hmm.
But like, it made sense. Like, oh, panic attacks and soccer are now linked, and there's no way I can unlink them because I can't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
But you said, got a junior year, I got nothing to lose, I might as well share. Like, could you say more about what you thought you had to lose prior that held you back from sharing?
Yeah, I think, I this was just, like I said, that was my junior year. So this was like a 2 to 3 year, process of basically hiding how I felt. I shared it with, one or two really close teammates, and definitely shared about how I was, indecisive about playing. But, when I had a panic attack, I never told anyone. I barely told my roommate, who was my closest friend at the time. I think I was holding back kind of just a fear of shame, a fear of embarrassment for what I was feeling. And I didn't think that what I was feeling was normal. I thought that kind of everyone was so happy to be doing this daily grind, which, everyone knows it is a grind, but I don't think a lot of people do know what's behind the daily grind, like the stress, the anxiety, the pressure. As you said, like it's hard to show, and it's, you don't want to show it in front of the initial kind of reaction or thought process is you don't want to show your teammates or your coach that you might be weak in any area, because you want to be on the field, you want to be starting, you want to be proved as strong, the best. As a male, like you said as well, like we have this stereotype of being strong and macho and alpha and things like that. And any weakness can kind of be, this is the stigma part, right? It's like, you don't want anything to be used against you, but ironically, it actually, in my opinion, takes the greatest strength to share your truth, share what you're going through. And the irony is there's probably a good chance that the guy next to you is going to be going through it too.
Yeah,
that's such a big part. Obviously your story conveys this, but even in what you were just saying, one of the things about anxiety is it makes us feel alone.
Right.
There's a lot that's powerful about your story, but the way you were able to take control of this, the way you were able to take charge, was by liberating yourself from it, by facing it, right? Instead of keeping it packed in, by letting it out, it allowed you not only to release some of that tension that you were holding on, but also to get some validation,
mm-hmm.
right? Which dispels this assumption that we have that this is, like you said, it's going to be seen as weakness, that people aren't going to understand this, so I'm going to be punished for it somehow. Now, obviously, every culture is a little bit different. There's no guarantees how any outside party is going to react. It sounds like your experience at Georgetown was they were incredibly supportive and it ended up really helping you. I guess I'm curious, I don't know how many of our listeners might know the sort of tier system of American soccer, right? So you playing for NYCFC2, You know, you're basically one level below MLS, NYCFC, and I imagine you have aspirations to play for NYCFC. Like, what is that environment like? You know, are you able to be as open? You know, have you found that other athletes have had similar experiences who are at this level? I mean, you know, you're at close to the highest level you can get in American soccer, which is saying something. For a couple of years ago, you saying you were sure you wanted to quit. Right. So, yeah, I'm just sort of curious that contrast, what you have found at the professional level.
Yeah. You know, I think I'm grateful because over the past couple of years, mental health has just been more valued, more talked about. So, you know, we make it a goal of ours to have a really strong culture, a really like inclusive, supportive culture at NYCFC. It's not something mental health that I'm speaking about. It's not something that, you know, we necessarily focus on every day. It's mainly kind of just work, the grind, and soccer. But we do have an implied invisible culture, just similar to how like the mental training is all kind of invisible. We have a very strong culture where we're not just teammates. We're really close outside of the field. We play golf together. We go bowling together. We eat together. If there's an off day, they're the people that I still want to spend the most time with. So I genuinely feel, you know, like I could talk to these guys about if I have something going on in my head, and I have talked about, you know, those things. I think it's implied when you get to this level that guys, again, that are used to playing 90 minutes, that are being the best on the team, are now all fighting for spots, and it gets hard. It gets really competitive, and it doesn't just get competitive and pressure with yourself. It gets competitive, unfortunately, with the same guys that you love, like your brothers. So it helps to talk about these things actually with your coaches, your teammates. And yeah, like I've had, you know, a couple conversations with teammates and coaches about this stuff, about how I'm feeling, maybe why I'm maybe a little bit more reserved one day. And it's nice to get to this level and still have that kind of be consistent. So I hope it keeps improving in general.
Can you say any more about, I mean, again, you said a lot of great stuff there. I don't mean to just hone in on one idea, just one thing that stuck out to me. Like you said, invisible, right? Like you said the mental health and the mental training were both sort of invisible aspects. And I wonder if you could elaborate on that, because, you know, I guess selfishly, that's an issue that's so near and dear to our heart as well, as, you know, Tim and I are constantly banging the drums for making it visible. We think it's really, really important. But having the experiences that we have with professional athletes, and, you know, I have some experiences at the level of soccer that you're at. And that's exactly what I've seen as well, is that it seems like people recognize the importance, but it is more of an invisible presence. And so can you elaborate on that, or what your take is on that?
Absolutely. So that's the challenge, right? Like I say invisible, we all kind of really want it to be visible, right? We don't just kind of want to go through it unconsciously. We want it to be a conscious process of, if you have, you know, a problem or an issue, or if you're struggling with something, here are the people and here are the resources to go to. It is, you know, I only have my experience. I don't know what other clubs are like, but we, like I said, we only kind of have each other to rely on, and I would like to see more psychologists and sports psychologists implemented in these MLS clubs. I do think there is a lot of great opportunity for resources. Like I said, I think we have each other to lean on. We have our coaches to lean on, but it does help, I think, if you really have, like you said, like something visible, a sports psychologist is something visible. A mental health professional is something visible, like, you know, clinicians, and just yeah, ways that we can support each other. That's the challenge, right? I mean, it's not something that should be invisible. I think ideally everyone would love it if we could just support each other and everything was sunshine and rainbows, but, you know, it's unfortunately not that way. So we are, I think, at the point in our society where we do really need to hone in on this, and make a conscious effort to put these people in place to support the players, the coaches, and the invisible culture that we can now make very strong visibly and say, you know, I know we're here to support each other. That's implied, but let's really like state that if you have, you know, something that you want to talk about, I'm here, he's here. We've just hired this guy. He's here. I value mental health. I know you guys obviously value mental health. I think it's more debatably more important than physical health. So we all know how much time, you know, athletic departments, and I know how much time that at the professional level, people spend on the physical training, the data that we collect. Yeah. But we, you know, to that point, actually, we do a survey every day. And it surveys our sleep, surveys our stress, surveys our soreness, which is more physical, but it does have those sort of those mental aspects implemented, sleep and stress. And I would hope and count on that if anyone puts, you know, less, we rate it out of 10. So if anyone puts, you know, 3 out of 10, I would hope that, you know, a conversation is going to be had about why someone's so stressed out. And it has, I've seen it. So, in that aspect, those are the kinds of things that we're doing. But like you said, I would really like to see more.
Yeah.
I had one more quick follow-up on, I'm sorry, Tim, I don't mean to, I know I'm hogging the floor here. I just, one last quick follow-up that I'm just sort of dying to know your answer to, and then I will shut up, I promise. So Tim and I, we meet regularly with other sports psychologists who practice in our community, in our area. I, one of the things I love about this profession is how close-knit it is, how collaborative it is. And I think one of the things that we talk about a lot, and even, you know, I talk regularly with folks around the world about this issue, is just the problem of access, right? The thing, like, we've got all these wonderful services to offer. We could really help. It's just so hard to make these inroads, especially in professional sport. Even if someone has a sports psychologist on staff or a clinical psychologist on staff, is that really a token position, or is that something that people really see the value in and make use of? Mm-hmm. And then when I hear you talking about, you know, that this is something you would really love. And I mean, you were using sort of we all, right? Like talking about how this is something the athletes would really appreciate. And I'm not asking you to say anything specific about your club, because, you know, we're not saying anything disparaging about NYCFC too, but like, what do you feel like the barriers are? Because if it seems like, you know, the athletes are interested, I know coaches can be interested, we're interested in providing the service, and yet somehow there's this difficulty with everyone getting together and making this happen. Like, from your experience on the athlete side, what do you think the barriers are there?
Such a good question, you know, because I asked the same question. I don't know if I have the answers. What I was thinking of actually when you were asking it was, one of my teammates has a mental health service that he includes a bunch of us. It's a training program. So if kids are kind of struggling or they want questions, they have professional athletes to go to, just to collaborate with, to ask questions. So my teammate's name is Alexander Rando, and it's, I believe the service is called NetKick. So he has a couple of us, just, you know, if anyone has a question, they come to us. And we all, it's a mental health kind of service. So in that aspect, you know, I think a lot of it currently is on the players right now to figure it out. You made a great point. I really liked what you said about access, because I think something that's really hard when you're kind of going through your emotions is there's some resistance to opening up, which is how I felt over 2 years. I got to the point where I felt like I had nothing to lose, like you said, but if there was something brought to me and kind of put in front of my eyes where it's like, I know that would really help me to share my truth. I feel comfortable with these people. They're coming to me and saying, hey, it's okay. I think I would probably have opened up a lot sooner if that was kind of come to, you know, if it came to me and I had access with those types of resources, I think, yeah, I would totally take advantage. So like I said, I can only reiterate, like I would really like to see those resources come to the professional level, the college level, the high school level. I really think it's needed everywhere. And obviously this goes for not just athletics, but you know, everyone has stressors in their lives. I think the invisible part, right, is like we all need to be there for each other and be supportive and, you know, encourage each other and be here to listen. But, you know, it's in today's day and age, I really think we need more than that. Because like I said, I think, you know, mental health is so important in how we operate just in our day-to-day lives. You know, I feel comfortable asking any person that walks down the street, just how is your mental health? I think that helps, you know, like we're not all strangers. We live in this world together. So yeah, I would really like to see something implemented that's concrete, you know, nothing. I'm tired of saying the word invisible.
That's a great, I appreciate that answer and all of its nuance, because yeah, you're right. I mean, it is a really hard question. But that's a good word. Like it feels like things can be so nebulous, and to hear you say that, you know, hey, if this was brought to me at an earlier time, I would have used it, like that to me is so important and so valuable. And such a big part, I think, of breaking down that stigma, right? Like, hey, look, I'm a highly successful athlete. I'm a professional soccer player. I would have really liked to have had this before.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, to add on, like the higher you go, probably the tougher it is to open up, because there's money, more money involved, more pressure involved, more eyes on you. And, you know, people can only see from afar. They don't know you. So, you know, social media can be very toxic in that way, to be frank. So yeah, I think we need to kind of just show more love and place more importance on this mental health side, because without a doubt, you know, regardless if people are saying it or not, they're definitely, you know, feeling the stress about it, and it helps to talk through it. It helps to have people to really work again, like you said, like this is a daily thing. If you work on it every day, you'll perform better. It's not something that's, you know, like I want to take a day off from practice. It's like, no, like this, if I have this support, this will get me to practice. This will allow me to be better in the games. I'll play better, you know, I'll feel better and I'll play better. So it's not just like a selfish move for me. It's like, I want to be there for the team in the best way possible. And here's what I need to be there.
Yes. Well, I mean, it's like that idea of the whole being athlete, right? Like athletes have feelings too. Athletes have other parts of their lives. They get stressed. They have depression, anxiety, and everything else that, like, yeah, they're whole people, not just robots that perform a task. And that's what feels so important about the kind of advocacy you do. Just like the honest, open sharing of these experiences to destigmatize it, but then also to raise awareness around what the need here is of a structural change. You know, as you were talking, I was thinking about kind of that performance triangle. You know, you've got tactical, physical, and mental, and not just football clubs, but like any sports organization. I mean, tactical and physical, they got, you know, they're really, yeah, really good at that. It's this mental piece that seems to be lacking. And we're really like, I think about the messages we send when it's like, oh, we don't just send athletes to the weight room and say, go figure it out. You know, you have a certified trainer, you have a strength and conditioning coach, a specialist to help you with this. Yeah. Oh, you've got a sore muscle? Like, go figure it out. Go Google it. No, we got a PT for you to see. We got a specialist, right? Why don't we do that with the mental health piece? Like you said, it would be great if we could all just support each other and it was sunshine and rainbows. But like, that's like saying, oh, it'd be great if we all just go kick the ball around every Wednesday. You know, like that's not how you train to be a professional athlete. But why would we expect that of our mental game? Like 1/3 of this whole pyramid, you know, but like the fear, you spoke to this about like why it's particularly hard at the elite levels when money's involved, when the stakes are so high. You know, I think about the pressure on coaches and teams. You got to have a winning record. If you don't, you're going to get kicked out, right? Like, and it's a risk. It's a change, right? From the status quo to say, you know what, we are going to invest time, money, and resources into mental health, right? Like mm-hmm. someone's putting their neck out when they do that, even though we're talking about it now, it like makes obvious, perfect sense, right? It's still mm-hmm. such a risk to change, but like it is a change we need.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I love what you said. And, you know, Athletes for Hope does a great job about the whole being athlete, because I think I actually, in a weird way, I'm just a very empathetic person. So I have empathy for people that view athletes as athletes, because it's the entertainment business, right? Like we're there, they pay money to come watch us play, right? But, you know, on the flip side of that, it's like you said, like we're human beings with real feelings. We get sad just like you do. We feel pressure just like you do, you know, just with daily activities. So yeah, I mean, you know, when someone has a really bad game, or, you know, I mentioned social media again, I just like, it upsets me when I see fans really like not treating players right, or, you know, they get all these nasty comments. And it just, it reinforces that idea that like, you're not really caring about this person's feeling. And the ironic thing is like, they might mess up one game and then the next game they do well. And then you're praising them and it's like, you know, these athletes are online. They see what's being said, not only offline, but just in general. So yeah, I think it's just so important that we reinforce this idea that, you know, our feelings are very important to us, and hopefully are more important to other people, because, you know, we're not just an athlete on the field, we're people on the field. We care about the fans, we care about, you know, our families, our friends, our teachers, you know, kids. So yeah, I mean, I think it's just such an important issue. It needs more recognition for sure.
We really, really appreciate you coming on today to share your story and to talk about this with us. We obviously think it's incredibly important. And we're grateful for your work. We've been fortunate to collaborate with Athletes for Hope a couple of times through our podcast. And so to hear about your work as a whole being ambassador, I think it's cool. And I would encourage anybody who's listening, who might be interested in checking it out. They have a whole page on their website on Athletes for Hope about their whole being athlete program and what it's all about. And so, Jack, thank you for being a part of that. And thank you for joining us today.
I just want to add one thing about, like, I think you're giving people an action item here, right? Because we're talking about, like, it's really important for athletes, right, to be able to be vulnerable and share their experience, you know, but you brought up something so important, like the fans, like why sport exists in the first place in some, you know, to some extent, or why it exists the way it does, right? Like, and every single fan out there, every person listening to this podcast who watches a sport, who might be one of those people commenting on an athlete, right? Like, you can be advocates too. I think about just the vitriol thrown at Naomi Osaka after she withdrew from the French Open, yeah, or Simone Biles sitting out from Olympic events. And like, so many negative comments, so much judgment. Like, we need more people also speaking up, right, on social media saying, no, I support her. I am inspired by that. You know, like that every single fan, even if they're not a professional athlete, like, you can be part of this change.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you saying that, because, you know, when I say that about the fans, it's not about me, right? Like, we get two comments on a post and it's nothing. I'm talking about, like, yeah, Naomi Osaka and Simone Biles and Michael Phelps. And, like, you know, when I was working with Athletes for Hope, that was the first time I heard or they told, like, just through the work that we were doing, that Michael Phelps was suicidal. And that has stuck with me for so long, because, I mean, people would just pay to spend a day with that guy, you know, and to have him question his worth on earth and not enjoy himself in life. And it's just, you know, there's really, like, that showed me just how much is going on behind the scenes that people may not realize. So yeah, like you said, I would really encourage anyone that's listening, you know, be an ally and be a leader, be the one that starts and can ignite this new attitude and this new change towards how we view athletes. So yeah, I appreciate you saying that, and thank you for having me on. I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Well, I know I just gave a plug for the Athletes for Hope website to check some of this out, but any other resources you'd recommend either on this topic or where people can maybe engage with you as an ambassador or just as an athlete?
Yeah. Athletes for Hope. I've done probably my most work there. I have a couple podcasts done on their social media pages that you can check out. I have an article that's published, I believe, on the Hidden Opponent and others. So yeah, I would encourage you guys to check that out. I have soccer highlights if you guys want to check those out too. But yeah, no, just, yeah, just playing and we have three games left in our season. So wrapping up the season and the year, I'm very pumped up for that. Other than that, yeah, just really focused on, yeah, playing and trying to continue this advocacy. Like I said, it's such an important, I don't even know what to call it. It's just important.
that's enough said. Like,
yeah, it's important. We need to, you know, make this invisible thing more visible. So,
and how can people follow you on social media? You mentioned being on social media.
Yeah, so you can follow me on Instagram. I think my at is jbeer10. So you can follow me there and. Yeah, I'll keep you guys updated with what I'm doing. But like I said, yeah, we got three games left. I'm just very, very excited. Hopefully we can get into the playoffs and yeah, we'll see where next season takes me as well.
Yeah, well, good luck with the rest of your season and moving forward. And again, thank you for all the work you're doing for this important cause. We appreciate it.
Yeah.
And just real quick for folks who want to connect with us with the MSB Institute, we have a website, www.mindfulsportperformance.org. We also have a Facebook page for our institute. For our podcast specifically, we have an Instagram page. The Instagram is @mindful_sport_podcast. We also have a YouTube channel where we post our exercises that start each of our episodes. So with Jack's blessing, we'll post what he led, the Wim Hof exercise at the start here, and building a nice big free library for folks who are interested in having mental training exercises at their disposal. So you can check that out. And then my Twitter handle for Dr. Keith Kaufman is @mindfulsportdoc. So you're welcome to connect with me there. And we always very much welcome reviews, ratings for our podcast, as well as for our book, Mindful Sport Performance Enhancement, Mental Training for Athletes and Coaches. Definitely if you like what you hear, like what you read, please don't be shy about giving us a review. We very much appreciate that. And just a quick thank you as well to our support team, to our producer, Taylor Brown, for all of his help, and for our colleague, Dr. Carol Glass, for all of her support of our podcast. So thanks again to Jack, and thanks to everyone who listened, and we'll see you all next time.